This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line, ready to go after a hearty 13-game slate of the NFL yesterday. Two more games to wrap up week two in the NFL preseason. I'm Ben Wilson from our Circus Sportsbook studios downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi is with me as well. Michael, I know you were fast on that couch watching football from sunup to sundown yesterday. People were clamoring for, let's get some preseason red zone going here. It was a great day of football. Some of the quarterback play left a little to be desired, but still a lot to talk about today. Excited to be back with you, sir.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here with you too, Ben. Thank you for coming in on Sunday. I think we've had a Saturday yesterday. You know, the Bears' first team offense could not move the football against the Bengals' second team offense. That has to be concerning. And so all this, you know, we got to wait and see all that. I think that's important to be patient with a quarterback like Caleb Williams. But the concerning part is when you watch Pittsburgh and you watch Russell Wilson and you watch their offense, how bad they looked in terms of protection, in terms of just some continuity in the game, you got to be alarming. And then, of course, the Raider game against the Cowboys. And we know the Cowboys don't have all their pieces in place, but, you know, the Raiders really struggled to throw the football like they did last year. So I think what we learned after Saturday's games is when you think you have two quarterbacks, as the great John Madden said, you don't have any quarterbacks. And I think we saw that in Pittsburgh, and we saw that out in Las Vegas. Now, we can pretend, you know, we can also extend that to Daniel Jones, one of your personal favorites, Ben, you know, and see how he played, you know. I mean, so you can make excuses, but when veteran quarterbacks don't play well in preseason, you're worried. I can tell you, you're worried about that.
You know, it's been great, though, is for bettors taking unders blindly from our own Dave Tooley after last night. 24-6 now to the unders based on closing lines. 80%.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's always the case, too. And you just say, like, how, and they keep lowering the number, and we keep going under. It's kind of a sad commentary on how football, we're not practicing enough football. That's pretty clear. Like I'm not saying the Bears' offense isn't going to be good. They can be, but I don't think they've had enough practice time to be good. Because with a second-team defense like the Bengals put out there yesterday can really slow you down. You can't run block a lick. Now, you could say, well, we didn't have Swift in the game. You can make 1,000 excuses in preseason. Here's what I do know about preseason. When something smells in preseason, it smells in September.
You made the great point even going back to last summer. You could tell with Frank Reich in Carolina. Something didn't smell right from week one in preseason there. And it was absolutely reflected, manifested into the regular season. I did want to start with that Chicago-Cincinnati game, though, because if you were just kind of looking at Twitter highlights and you weren't able to deep dive, there were so many games yesterday. I think the general consensus, Michael, coming out of that game was, oh my goodness, Caleb Williams made a couple unbelievable plays. This guy is ready. He is going to be a stud as a rookie because he saw, you know, the amazing job to extend plays with the legs. He makes a great play throwing the ball about 30 yards down the field. Then on the, you know, improvisation, gets out of a potential would-be sack, scrambles left, rolls out, dives into the end zone for a 7-yard touchdown. Those were the highlights, but what I'm sure a lot of people didn't see, Michael, was what you kind of alluded to. The other struggles here in a guy that goes 6-13 against a, you know, backup defense, and it kind of speaks to what is likely to be the case this year in Chicago, where you're going to see a lot of, you know, extremely high wire, impressive plays out of pocket where Caleb Williams makes something out of nothing. But at the same time, that is not a general optimal solution when you're talking about a young quarterback who was very turnover prone in college, who has not done it before and has not seen high level defenses yet. So to me, certainly a harbinger of things to come for Chicago. Like, we're going to see the brilliance this year at times, but on the whole, consistency, play to play, Michael, I still have my doubts there on the Bears.
Well, look, I mean, you know, go through the drive chart, see who the Bengals had on the field. They didn't have their guys. So first drive of the game, they come out. Of course, naturally, they have no idea they play in Chicago, right? They could care less that they play in Chicago, even though it's going to be rainy, cold, windy by the middle of October in some of those games. They come out and trying to fire the ball all over the place, 3 and out, boom, 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 3 and out. Don't gain a yard on that drive. They get penalized in there. They come back out go another 3 and out, but they gained 8 yards, so that's encouraging. Then they come back out again, Ben, and they go 3 and out, but they gained 8 more. So they're doing really well. We've got 16 yards in the first quarter gaining. And then in the second quarter, they go 5 plays. Well, that's great. We got at least a first down. and we kick a field goal because we gained 17 yards, but we got a 38-yard penalty on a pass interference call. That's why we got 3 points. And then, again, this is all Bengals backups. Right. And then they go 8 plays, 90 yards for a touchdown, get 4 first downs. If you're an executive and you're the Chicago – if I'm Ryan Poles and I'm watching that tape, I'm saying, look, we're not good enough up front to block the backups of the Bengals. How the hell are we going to block the starters of the Lions? How are we going to block the starter? How are we going to block Kenny Clark in here? How the hell are we going to block Aleem McNeil? You know, if we can't block these guys, we're going to have a tough time running the football. And let me say this really clearly for all Bear fans. If you can't run the ball, Caleb Williams is not going to win games for you throwing 45 times. It just ain't going to happen. I know he's a good player. He's the best quarterback Bear fans have had. I told you Mitchell Trubisky was no good. I told you Justin Fields was no good. I'm telling you, Caleb Williams can be a good player, but you're going to have to redesign the offense so you have some more physicality, or else there's going to be a lot of turnovers, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears had 3 losses last year with a fourth quarter win probability of over 80%. What does that tell you? Couldn't protect leads, could not effectively use their offensive line to run the football, stay ahead of the chains. And as much as there's optimism about the reshuffling there, and, you know, a lot of publications have the Bears kind of penciled in here, top 15 O-line for sure coming into the year, that is still something that is, as long as you know, that is a big fear factor for a team like Chicago, who has a rookie quarterback. You know, I know the data and the history says, you know, quarterbacks who come into situations like this are actually, you know, with a 6.5 win total or higher, rookie quarterbacks last 15 years, those teams have gone 4-2 to the over with 3 playoff teams. Yet, offensive line usually has been much better. Like, you think about when Mark Sanchez came into the Jets, he had a rock solid line in front of him, helped him have a lot of success in that 09 season. That's still where I'm a little bit hesitant here to fully get behind Chicago, as much as there's a lot of positivity, you know, up and down that roster. The big holes, though, are in the parts that matter a lot for young guys, and that's O-line especially.
Right. And I think what we have to do as a betting network and betting analyst is take a look at these preseason games and not just look like the fans look at the game books and the highlight plays that the worldwide leader is going to show your NFL network, because there's more to it. Let's take the Giants game, for example, right? The Giants have their starters in the game, pretty much all their starters in the game, whereas the Houston Texans put their starting unit out there with the offense. Right. They had other than Laramie Tunsil, they had pretty much all their starters in the offensive line, and they had C.J. Stroud. They went right down the field on the Giants, right down the field on them. Meanwhile, the Giants, you know, they couldn't move the football. And then Daniel Jones does things that, you know, you would expect a first year player to do, not a guy making $40 million that we've spent all offseason building our team around, you know. So there, now I'm worried. I thought Houston looked very good. I think that airplane ride back from Houston to New York was a little bit unsettling for the Giants. What are we going to do with quarterback? Are we good enough on defense to really win? You know, and so I think you have to kind of take a look at it. What happened a couple of years ago, Ben? San Francisco went down to Houston. Houston whooped the butt, right? Trey Lance was horrible. Kyle Shanahan on that plane ride home said, that's enough. Jimmy Garoppolo, you're no longer on that field. You're on this field. I think this week is what reality sets in. It's set in. I think clearly it's going to have to set in for a team like the Giants, and it's got to set in for a team like the Raiders. I think Mike Tomlin, who I have tremendous respect for, but you can't watch Russell Wilson play and feel like he's the same. He looks like an old boxer that was once great that doesn't have greatness anymore.
Yep. In that Giant-Texans game, Michael, we were on the air with Mike Palm yesterday morning watching everybody in the world flock to the over in that game with the news that Daniel Jones would be in. A lot of money in on the Giants. Went from 5.5 to 3-point dogs. Total gets moved all the way out to 40.5, and we're thinking, what? Why? Because Daniel Jones is making his first appearance back off an ACL without Malik Nabers in, who had the sprained ankle earlier in the week, wide receiver, and really no other skilled position players you would feel confident in. Well, I guess we know why the total went up, Michael, because Daniel Jones just, you know, gift-wrapped the Texans 6 points on a pick six. So that was obviously why. We should have seen that coming the whole way. And yeah, you are right. I mean, I feel like, I'm sure there are Giants fans out there going, well, you guys have been just beating the dead horse here, you know, all offseason. But you have to at least give us something to have any sort of modicum of positivity about. Giants can't do it, Michael. And it's a team that I've been in on as the worst team in the NFL. You can still get them out there 10-11-1 in the market. And it's just a team that I keep waiting for something. Positionally, every single part of the roster doesn't look like there's anything to get excited about. And even the defense, which was good last year, you think about, you know, in some parts, they had the widest gap in the NFL of, you know, turnovers versus actual defensive EPA. Like, they basically just feasted off turnovers, which are not sustainable year to year. And it's why I still don't have much confidence even in the defensive side of the ball, keeping them in games this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, Neighbors was great. He went out there.
Yeah.
What do you have? You know, he played, which the book was wrong on. They didn't think he was going to play, but he went out there and played. He had four catches for 54 yards. The first drive, he had a chance to make a play. Kind of went through his hands. Stingley, first play of the game, Ben, Stingley drops an interception. I mean, that's not even something they're going to talk about. Everybody's going to watch the bad Daniel Jones play. First play of the game, they come out and Daniel throws it right between the two and the four of Stingley, and he drops it. So there's a concern there. I think, to me, you've got to readjust your thinking a little bit here, because you get so lured into believing you're practicing against the same people all the time that you're actually better than you are.
Well, yeah, look, and it's the only team in the NFL. Like, top five turnover rate, bottom half defensive EPA from a season to go. So, like, if you have offense that has all these question marks, like, you need something on the other side of the ball to help pick you up. And as awesome as, you know, Malik Nabers has been when he's been healthy, Michael, yeah, it's clearly not there right now. And I will be curious to see where you have, you know, like, Minnesota had the injury earlier in the week with the backup quarterback coming into the year, J.J. McCarthy. He was never going to play anyway week one. Where that line goes, Michael, to start the season. Because it's a Vikings team that I think is a lot better than people give them credit for.
Yeah.
They go to New York. They're about a point favorite. You're going to have to hold me back. That's going to be a day of Vikings play all day as we start the season. We're just getting the show started. We'll talk about more takeaways from preseason week two from last night. There's a lot to get to. What to make of the Raiders quarterback battle. Antonio Pierce says he's sleeping on it, Michael. What does that mean? We'll discuss it next here on the Lombardi Line. Into the heart of preseason reaction. We love doing that here on the Lombardi Line. We have a fun show coming up. Michael Lombardi, I'm Ben Wilson. Tim Murray, VSiN host of VSiN Primetime, joins us in 15 minutes. Excited to get some college football thoughts from Tim on the futures market coming up. And then at 11:30 Eastern, to have him in studio is a real treat. Vaughn Dalzell, our pal from NBC Sports, betting analyst there. Vaughn in town here for the weekend. He will be with me here at Circa, talking also some of his favorite college football win totals and futures coming into 2024. We do get back, though, Michael, to the NFL preseason takeaways. Man, to call it a quarterback battle, you put the undercase B in battle there for the Las Vegas Raiders, where last night, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew, between the two of them, they attempted 41 passes for a combined 191 yards. That is a whopping 4.7 yards per attempt there. And the quote after the game, Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce, Raiders lose 27-12 to the Cowboys. He goes, team's decision makers, I don't know who those would be, but you'd presume Pierce will be in that mix, will, quote, sleep on it and make a decision in the next couple of days as far as the quarterback battle. I'm sure whoever's sleeping on it, Michael, it had to have been some nightmares and some not great thoughts as you're trying to figure out who do you start at quarterback when neither guy, Minshew nor O'Connell, has been impressive whatsoever.
You know, it's fascinating he would say that. I mean, like, he's the head coach of the team. It's his call. It should be his call. Like, is Tommy Delaney from the salary cap going to come over and say, hey, I really think this guy, Tommy Delaney was selling shirts out of the back of his car before he came to the Raiders. I mean, seriously, what's he going to talk about? Like, what are they going to talk? Who's the decision maker? Mark Davis is going to come in and buy an opinion? I don't understand it, but look, that's just the way things are. Fact that they were 7-for-17 on third down with veteran quarterbacks and Dallas playing a very vanilla coverage. I mean, Mike Zimmer wasn't out there trying to do anything difficult. You know, what I liked about the game, Ben, is I don't think Trey Lance is going to be a starting quarterback, but they've given Trey Lance a lot of reps. They've played Trey Lance. I mean, they have a lot of tape on Trey Lance, and he wasn't good on third down in the game, but they have a lot of tape on him, and so they can see it. But look, the Raiders start their starting team. Now, I understand they didn't start Davante Adams, but look, they started Jacoby Myers. You know, they had all their guy, Trey Turner, out there. They had Tucker out there. So for me, I just think, to me, this is a team that has no quarterback. I don't care how you look at it. They could flip a coin. Do you remember when Herm Edwards was sitting there deciding whether he was going to start Brady Coyle or Damian Hurd? I mean, like that. Remember that on Hard Knocks? Like, you're sitting there pondering a decision that's no decision. I mean, you're going to play both of them anyway. You don't have a quarterback. You're going to play a guy, and you're going to get mad that you're going to take him out. Like, you can anoint somebody the starter, but it's only temporary.
Tyler Palka wasn't walking through that door for Kansas City, you know, not to, you know, I mean, for the Chiefs now, we can make those jokes because they're fine. They've got that quarterback named Patrick Mahomes who is pretty, pretty good within the same division. Sounds like, based on the postgame comments, it is, it's Pierce, it's Tom Telesco, the GM, and OC Luke Getsy. It's, you know, some of these quotes too, just going back, it's Pierce saying, I'm gonna go to OTAs, mini camp, training camp. There's going to be a lot of factors. It's like, well, you know, at this point, I mean, you kind of have seen all you need to know that it's, you know, neither guy is really going to really bolster your team's chances of actually winning here. And it's a shame for the Raiders because there are some pieces to like. You think about the wide receivers they have and, you know, how good of a front line defensive team it is. But, man, it's, I almost wonder if Pierce, based on his nature, Michael, as a ground and pound, run first, he's a, you know, as a linebacker in the back in the day, mostly for the Giants, will he just go with the guy who he feels like will turn over the ball the least, which I don't even know who you'd feel confident with that, you know, with that statement, because as much as, you know, O'Connell is younger and he threw the pick six yesterday, you know, Gardner Minshew has been very much a turnover worthy guy in his time when he's come in as a backup for the most part in his career.
You got to play both of them. It doesn't really matter who you appoint the starter because they're not good enough. I mean, that's the foul. And the hard part is teams know it, right? Teams understand it. Here's the reality is they don't have a guy that's going to make an explosive play. Yeah, maybe Trey Tucker can make one, but the defense kind of knows it. Adams isn't down the field. It's all play action stuff. So they're going to be an easier team to defend. And this whole notion, well, we're going to run the ball to help the quarterback. Well, the other team knows you're trying to run the football too. Look, the Raiders are in the same boat they were in last year. They can't get good quarterback play. They just can't. And it's going to be a problem. And for Dallas, you know, Dallas didn't have any of their frontline defensive players out there. Think about this, Ben. You got Gardner Minshew, who's very experienced, playing against guys on the Dallas defense. I mean, Phillips, who they just acquired from the Giants the other day, started the game.
Right.
I mean, so, like, don't tell me they're playing any of their guys, and they dominated them. I mean, the first quarter, you know, the Cowboys end up, you know, because they get the interception return, but, I mean, the Cowboys moved the ball. I know Aubrey had to kick a 54-yard field goal to do it, but still, you know, you Cowboys are working with their second-team guys.
Sure thing.
That's what you have to look at in these preseason games is who's playing and who's playing against them and how serious it is. Now, I think overall, on a larger scale, the level of football isn't good enough yet. Teams haven't had enough practices. Teams are so worried about injuries. You know, it's going to take till the halfway through September to get the quality of playback. Like, not for the Chiefs, not for the Chiefs because they practice. Not for some teams that practice. And I think if you're in Survivor, you better go with a team that's been practicing. Like, for example, the Bengals, with their backups, the way they looked out there, they were pretty good against the Bears. They moved the ball against the Bears' front team defense with their backups. That's what you're looking at.
You want at least to have some sort of confidence heading into the year. I mean, that's the whole point. I think that's very good good piece of advice, especially on the Survivor front for so early in the year when we tend to see tons and tons of upsets. Yeah, I guess, you know, last thing for me on the Raiders, like, you would like to at least think, well, the, you know, defense was so good down the stretch for AP. Can they at least use that to keep them in these low-scoring games? You know, second in defensive EPA, second half of the year, but second most number of snaps against backup quarterbacks. Like, how much of that was kind of feasting off poor competition down the stretch? And, you know, they were also the second healthiest team in the league last year. There were not many injuries overall for the Raiders. That's stuff that generally evens out year to year. And that's why I have my doubts on a Raider team that certainly seems to be way, way off the top as far as that division goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a struggle. Let's go back to Pittsburgh. I mean, is anybody screaming for Russ to cook?
Yeah, I don't know about that. No. No, nobody with the Permane brothers is like, hey, we want Russ on our side now. Doesn't seem like that. And it's why, you know, it always is nice reading your articles at VSiN.com. Check out Michael's latest right now. I just wanted to give you a plug on that because you wrote about the Cowboys who the Raiders just faced. Brandon Aubrey hit a 66-yard field goal, by the way. That was one of the, you know, probably the highlight of that game when it tied Justin Tucker's
amazing
record. It's not all that far, you know, far-fetched to say Cowboys might have the best special teams in the league this year with how awesome Aubrey is as a rock-solid kicker. But you wrote about at VSiN.com. We have also all sorts of best bets and betting splits, exclusive articles up, including Michael's on Jerry Jones. And, you know, we're at now into week three about here, Michael, the preseason. And you still got a lot of questions about what is Jerry going to do with the state of the Cowboys that have a solid roster, yet, you know, a couple of very, very big impactful players, to put it kindly, are still yet to be signed long-term.
Yeah, I mean, I keep waiting for it every day. I just like I keep waiting for the San Francisco 49ers, but it hasn't happened yet. I do believe CeeDee Lamb will get done. But look, I think Jerry, as I wrote about in the column, I think Jerry is still has the sting. Why should I be rewarding players for that game last year against your Packers, Ben? You know, that was an ugly, ugly game. And it really wasn't. And his team has got a lot to prove to him. You know, losing at home, getting embarrassed at home, those things weigh on an ownership. And now, look, he's got to pay Lamb. I get that. But he doesn't have to pay Lamb, you know, to where everybody thinks he needs to pay Lamb. He still has Lamb under contract for the fifth year at a franchise and two franchises. The same thing with Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase has four more years. So within the framework of the league, he doesn't have to do that. And I think ultimately you'll see, I mean, this deal is going to get done. It's just a question of when it's going to get done and we can stop talking about it.
Sure thing. Yeah, and it's a 9.5 win total team, still a very solid roster. I just wonder, we're never going to accuse Jerry Jones of being analytically sound, Michael. That would never be an accusation I would put on old Jerry. But do you think he realizes like just how the team feasted on weak opponents last year? You kind of look at the splits here, best EPA defense against bottom 10 offenses, but they were 21st when they played top 10 offenses a season ago. I realize that's on the defensive side of the ball. So much of the conversation has been around Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, but do you think there's a realization within that building at all of Dallas that there was a little smoke and mirrorsy sort of essence to the regular season, a kind of a reflection of why they got curb stomped the way they did against Green Bay in the playoffs?
You know, I've often said that I thought they overachieved last year. I didn't think they underachieved. I've said that for a while. I don't think they're this great, great, talented. They've got some really talented players, but their offensive line struggles against good comp. Five losses on the road. When they get behind in games, they can't stop the run. So there's more to this team than just, oh, we're the greatest team on all. The fact that Mike McCarthy's won 36 games is impressive. However, that being said, he's got Dak to play really well. But I don't see this team, no running back on the team. You know, they're going to have to be able, the defensive tackle situation, when you're trading for Julian Phillips from the Giants, in week two, you're in trouble.
No doubt. Yeah, look, and the reality is, if you take out garbage time last year, the Cowboys were in a lot of blowouts, their defense finished 31st in success rate. I mean, this is a team that was top four in EPA, expected points added overall, a large part because of the takeaways. That's a pretty massive delta. I mean, no matter how you're looking at the numbers, when you think about where Dallas is at, just something to keep in mind here for 2024. We'll talk more NFL preseason in a little bit, but up next, Tim Murray from VEASAN Primetime joins to break down college football. We're under a week out from the start of the college football season. Back on the Lombardi Line here from downtown Las Vegas, I'm Ben Wilson. He's Michael Lombardi. How awesome is it, Michael, that at this time next week, I believe you'll be with Stormy, but at this time next week, you guys will be breaking down what just happened in week zero of college football, which is pretty awesome. I mean, the fact that we're 6 days away. So, I'm excited. I know you are as well.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, look, we're going to get on a routine. I think that's the best part. And, you know, when you get into that routine, it's just the weeks go and we get to talk about football constantly. It's really good. And you know, 10 days from now, we have the Battle of the Beaches here in Ocean City, New Jersey, where Bergen Catholic comes in and plays IMG. So we have it in all different elements. We have high school, college, and pro coming up soon.
Next Sunday might be the most airtime. Delaware State Hornets or the Nevada Wolfpack or New Mexico Lobos get on VEASAN, at least for some time. Anyway, Tim Murray knows a thing or two about all those teams. He's the host of our VEASAN College Football Betting Podcast. We go out to our progressive guest line right now. You also see Tim Monday through Fridays on VEASAN Primetime, 6 to 9 Eastern. And Tim, I've gotten a lot of great insight here from the College Football Betting Pod. It's been a really nice resource for all of us, I think, to get prepared for the offseason. I think a lot of bettors now, they're starting to look at these odds and they're going, whoa, I mean, SMU Nevada's moved like almost a touchdown for next week. It's 27. Money's coming in on Georgia Tech. What do you make? Just to kind of get bettors caught up to speed here, as this is really now the time where we're getting, a lot of the casual bettors are starting to do their deep dive onto what to expect for week zero. For those two FBS versus FBS games next week, what do you make of where there has been a lot of betting interest coming in, one on a favorite, one on an underdog?
Well, first, I need to know the betting line. That's a big big spot for the New Jersey boys to bring in IMG. So I'll ask Michael offline about how we make money off some of that battle. But we'll start with the biggest one, where College Game Day will be in 6 days, Aviva Stadium, and You know, they played in this stadium just a year ago. Notre Dame played Navy, and I was texting with a couple of folks who covered that game just to see, hey, you know, how was the field conditions? Is this going to be a concern? And, you know, from everything that they said, the field conditions shouldn't be a worry there over at Aviva Stadium. So that's good, as they were prepared for that game a year ago when Notre Dame played Navy. As for how this game has been lined, Ben, you know, it's funny because this was probably a game at 14 that I might have been looking to take the dog here a little bit in Georgia Tech. You know, this team has a really challenging schedule for the entire year, and we've actually seen some money coming on their under win total. I believe it opened around 5.5. It's now down to 5. But their schedules is so daunting. But I do think as the year goes on, guys, this could be a team that could challenge some of the big boys that are on their schedule. But I think I agree with the move, and I wonder maybe have we gone a little bit too far with this one. So that's where I would initially kind of feel. You know, Florida State, obviously a lot of changeover with DJ Uiagalelei coming in as their starting quarterback. Obviously, he has experience in the ACC, spending the majority of his career at Clemson. Then he went to Oregon State last year. I think some people certainly were surprised to see that that's who they ended up going with as their starting quarterback via the portal early on in the offseason to replace Jordan Travis. But look, Mike Norvell's done a phenomenal job over his time there at Florida State, building through it within the portal. So Florida State, one of the more interesting teams, I would say, in the ACC, and it does really feel like it's a three-headed monster to ultimately grab that automatic bid out of the ACC, whether it be Miami, Clemson, or Florida State. As for the late night game, just a couple hours north of where we sit, Ben, man, this is, Jeff Choate coming into Nevada from Texas. It's going to be a full-on rebuild here for the Wolfpack, and SMU is a team that, you know, I know Stormy in our VSIN college football guide wrote up there over. I have a little bit of exposure to over 7.5 wins onto SMU. This is a team that very portal heavy, and did a good job in building through the portal. Preston Stone coming off of an injury from a year ago. This is a guy that I think is absolutely a P4 type of quarterback, and that's what SMU is now. So I would actually, if forced to play it, I would probably still look to lay it with SMU. I think this is a team that might be looking to make a statement, and I think they'll be ready to rock and roll up there in Reno, where we just don't know what to expect from Nevada in year one of the Jeff Choate era.
Hey, Tim, let's skip ahead to the next week, week one, I guess. And interesting matchup. North Carolina goes to Minnesota, and the line's been right around North Minnesota favored by 2.5. You know, to me, North Carolina should be a better program than they are. We know, obviously, they get quarterbacks drafted, Sam Howell, Drake May. But what's your take on this game, and where is Mac Brown's program as it relates to all these other schools?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big year, in my opinion, Michael, for North Carolina, with them, you know, replacing a defensive coordinator. They're 2 years removed of replacing Phil Longo as their offensive coordinator. It's the first time in quite some time that they don't have a surefire, NFL quarterback, you know, taking snaps, right? Sam Howell followed by Drake May. So, you know, this is a game where Minnesota is not a team that I'm necessarily all that high on heading into this year. PJ Fleck, another year there for the Golden Gophers. So, you know, they just lost their defensive coordinator to go to Michigan State. Minnesota did. So, this is, you know, a game that will have a lot of eyeballs certainly on that Thursday, Michael. So, I'll acquiesce a little bit here to Adam Burke, who is very bullish on UNC this year and thinks they could be a bit of a dark horse team. Not a game that I've personally bet, but I think this one we could learn a lot from of what these two teams could potentially be with some coaching changeover from this offseason to now. But yeah, at this point, I probably would look maybe a little bit towards the dog, especially if we get up to 3 and it looks like we're trending that way at some shops, you know, 2.5, juice 15 at some spots. So, yeah, this could be a spot where I think you might see that number grab at 3 if we ultimately get there. Certainly an interesting one of teams that I think will, you know, be kind of in that, middle of the pack in both of their respective conferences.
He's Tim Murray. Give him a follow at One Tim Murray with us right now here on the Lombardi Line from our progressive guest side. It's a classic case study. We see it every year, Tim. A conference like the ACC, which the games we've been previewing involve four ACC teams. A lot of reasons to get excited about so many teams at the top. Florida State, one. Clemson, two in a lot of the power ratings. Miami getting tons of hype. Like, I'm in on NC State. I have some over 8.5 in my account there. Yeah, Stormy's made the case for SMU over. Adam Burke likes UNC. I mean, you know, one of these teams in the top 7 or 8 of the power ratings is going to be a massive disappointment. Who would be your best take on who is going to disappoint as far as that upper echelon of the ACC this year?
I don't know if it's a massive disappointment, but I would lean under on Florida State. I mean, it's a lot to bring back. Their win total sits at 9.5. And, you know, you look at the schedule, they have the two big boys in Miami and Clemson. Now they get to host Clemson, but they also have to go to Notre Dame in a pretty tricky situational spot. Notre Dame, a preseason top 10 team. And, you know, for Notre Dame on November 9th, they're coming off a bye, and Florida State will be playing their fourth game in as many weeks. They'll be traveling to South Bend. And then you got to wrap up the season, you know, granted at home, but a challenging spot there. So from a win total perspective of those three, I think Florida State would be that, quote, disappointing team, you know, because you're right, man. I mean, the ACC, it feels like everywhere I turn, whether it be, you know, you looking at NC State and, you know, is Grayson McCall going to be the proper quarterback for Robert and I's offense? Because last year was an absolute disaster with Brendan Armstrong coming in and reuniting with his former OC, or whether it's Virginia Tech bringing back all the production that they've had from a year ago, or SMU from a scheduling standpoint where they don't play a lot of the big boys and they go over their win total. I think at the end of the day, guys, I do think it is a tiered conference where the three best teams are, Clemson, Miami, and Florida State. And I think, you know, for me, if I had to pick one of those three to, quote, disappoint, I would look a little bit towards Florida State with a lot to come back. And you could be looking more at a 9-win season as opposed to obviously what they did last year, which was run the table and go undefeated. And then unfortunately for them, due to the Jordan Travis injury, get left out of the playoff.
How about Clemson? Talk to me about Clemson. I mean, Dabo has been very reluctant to get into the NIL and the transfer portal. What's his team going to look like, and is this going to work out? For me, the schedule is pretty good for him. It should be good. How good are they, though?
Well, we'll find out week one, right, Michael? I mean, you get to play Big Bad Georgia, and that's going to be quite the challenge. And I don't know if that's going to be a fair measuring stick, because I don't think this team is where they used to be, which was rivaling teams like Georgia for the national championship and beating a team like Alabama. But, you know, I picked Clemson, and it wasn't a bet, but I ultimately picked Clemson to win the ACC in our guide when we made all our selections. I think this team is maybe getting slept on a little bit. They still have been recruiting at an elite level. Obviously, if they were plugging holes, it would be much better for them via the portal like a team like Georgia is doing. But, yeah, you look at the schedule. They have to go to Florida State. They avoid Miami. They do have to go to Virginia Tech. I think ultimately, I don't know if they win the conference, guys, but I think Clemson, in year two of Garrett Riley as their offensive coordinator, and maybe Cade Klubnik, former five-star recruit, finally clicks there. I love Phil Maffa, their running back. I think they're playing for the ACC championship in early December.
Great stuff. For more college football, check out all Tim's contributions in our guide, VSiN College
Tim.
Football Betting
great
Pod. VSiN Pro subscriber. For $175, you can get that through the Super Bowl. Always great to catch up with Tim Murray here from VSiN Primetime. Thanks so much, Tim. Good to see you, man.
See you guys.
As we'll continue the ACC discussion next, Michael, there's a team I'm betting on, a team I'm also looking to fade in the game of the year markets within the ACC. We'll discuss that next here on the Lombardi Line. A big thank you to Tim Murray from VSiN Primetime for joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Great insights from him, Michael, to talk some college football week 6 days away. We'll have more college football talk with Von Dalzell coming up in about 45 minutes. Before we get back to the college football, though, Michael, we do have a signing to report that happened right as we were coming on the air today. Want to get into that breaking news here on the show. It's Minnesota, team much maligned this offseason, and they lose their backup quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, for the year with the torn meniscus. But they are signing a vet to help fill that stable of cornerbacks that has certainly had some room for improvement, to say the least, with the personnel they've had. But 34-year-old Stephon Gilmore, off of a torn labrum injury, last played for the Cowboys in 23, reunited with his D.C. Brian Flores, who was in New England with him back when really Gilmore was at the peak of his powers, prime of his career here, Michael. And the question becomes, is that enough really to move the needle with a guy as experienced as Gilmore, you figure he'll be a great locker room guy. It's a 1 year, $7 million deal. You just kind of have to ask, okay, how much is left on the tires there for a guy who's had major injuries here recently?
You know, he played decent for the Cowboys last year. I think certainly he did. I mean, that's why he's been out there. It's the concern about the injuries, the concern about can he continue to do that. I mean, Shaq Griffin right now was listed as the starter. Byron Murphy is their number one corner, if you will. They signed Fabian Moreau from Denver, is another guy with veteran experience. So, look, they need a young corner. I think it's one of the things that Brian Flores wanted to try to get out of the draft, you know, and see if they could get a young corner in the first round. They took Dallas Turner instead, which is still a good pick. I mean, they traded up to get him. So with Van Ginkle, Turner, Greenard, you know, now they've got Rush. And if they can hang on a little bit in coverage, we know this. I mean, Brian watched the tape, I'm sure, this morning of Houston playing the Giants. And anytime Daniel Jones is under pressure, oh, what's going on? I mean, something bad could happen. Something good could happen for the defense. So I think he, you know, the key here is can he get him to play at a good level? He doesn't have to be elite like he was for the Patriots, because the pressure's coming in Minnesota. There's no question.
It's a big reason why I like Minnesota week one. You talk about blitz-heavy team against one of the worst O-lines and then a quarterback who is coming off at ACL. And Daniel Jones, another reason why. Yeah, Minnesota laying the point there, a good way to tackle week one. But you know, in overall, you look at Minnesota, I mean, 17th in defensive EPA last year for a team. I think a lot of people around the league, Michael, would have graded out. The talent was certainly bottom 10. But what Brian Flores was able to get out of them, you know, blitzing over half the time. There's been some reports out of Minnesota that they want to incorporate more man coverage this year. Well, it's really hard to do that when you don't have the personnel to cover guys on the outside. At least if Gilmore's healthy, you kind of know what the savvy nature of, you know, his skill and his career overall does give them that presence, which to me is a good thing. And it's, you know, it's a team that nobody wants to really buy in on Minnesota, but they were never going to start J.J. McCarthy at quarterback anyway. Like, to me, I don't understand why so many people are saying, well, McCarthy's hurt, we got to be out on the Vikings, when it was always going to be Sam Darnold from day one anyway. Why we should be so sour on a Minnesota team that has a lot to like when you really go under the hood.
That's a great point, Ben. I mean, that's just what happens is we have these media catches that you get stuck on. You know, it's like you can't go to the Super Bowl without a rookie contract. It's ridiculous, right? We know that, okay? That's one of the most ridiculous statements of all time. There's been one guy who's done it, Patrick Mahomes. You know, now you can't go to the Super Bowl with a quarterback who commands 19% of the cap like Daniel Jones. That's correct. But, you know, the fact that this J.J. McCarthy getting injured, to me, I think it makes it a lot easier for the Vikings, because now nobody's looking over their shoulder. You know, who's the most popular guy in town, right? Who's the backup quarterback? And so, you know, if Darnold throws a pick, everybody in the stadium is going to be screaming for McCarthy. They're not going to be screaming for Nick Mullins now. So that kind of settles things down in terms of the team. I'm not saying it's, you know, that Darnold's better than McCarthy. McCarthy's not ready yet. Everybody has to calm down on the rookie quarterbacks. We saw Caleb Williams struggle against the backup of the Bears. Now, you wouldn't know that when you look at read the paper. But when you see the tape, you know he struggled. He didn't make a lot of good throws.
Yep.
So I think you have to just slowly. It's going to be a long season. And I think Minnesota, this signing, look, I don't know if the Bears are that much better than Minnesota. I really don't. I mean, Minnesota's will attack that bad offensive line of Chicago. That'll be a problem for Caleb Williams. Look, they drafted Kyrie Jackson from Oregon in the fourth round. Unfortunately, this young man got in a car accident and passed away. And so they lost a guy that they thought potentially could be a starter in their secondary, and they needed Gilmore to come in and help them. I like their team. I like Aaron Jones. I like their running back. You know, I thought when Josh Jacobs signed with the Packers, I didn't think they were going to cut Aaron Jones. I thought he was going to be the 1-2 punch. But that 1-2 punch lasted 10 seconds.
It did. Yeah. As someone from the great state of Wisconsin, Aaron Jones is, as much as he struggled to stay on the field, as underrated of a dual threat guy, is especially in the NFC, as we have. The fact that he stayed in the division, I was like, oh, come on, really?
Yeah, when you watch the Packer tape against the Cowboys and you watch Aaron Jones block Micah Parsons, you know, now nobody will say this, but, you know, I mean, he comes up, steps up in one of the big throws of the game. It's because Jones takes him in there. I mean, that cannot be understated how good he is in the blocking scheme and what he does and his juice, his ability to break tackles. Like he doesn't have long speed. You know, they caught him on the long run against the 49ers. But look, he's going to be a hard guy for Josh Jacobs to replace. Trust me on that.
100% I agree with you on that. Reason why we're talking Minnesota, Stephon Gilmore signed this morning from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Could be up to $10 million, $7 million guaranteed for that one-year deal. If you ask also a lot of people, Michael, okay, well, you know, how do you think the Vikings ranked on offense? Like overall EPA after Kirk Cousins went down last year, QB, with, you know, with the potpourri of backups they threw out there. I'm sure most people would say, well, that was a bottom five offense. They finished 16th in offensive EPA, the final late games of the year. Like Kevin O'Connell is a really smart coach on offense. And now as much as people want to rip Sam Darnold, the guy probably gives you a better chance to win football games than the combination of the Jaren Hall, Nick Mullins that they had last year down the stretch.
Right. And they were 31st in the National Football League in turnovers by their offense. They were 30th in fumbles. They were 29th in interceptions. And so they were giving games away. Look, I know Darnold has a propensity to turn the ball over. I get that. I understand that completely. But I do believe with what you said there is so damn true about Minnesota, because we don't factor in the coaching. It's like this whole nonsense about Bo Nix. He's not a first round pick. Who says that? Like the guy that picked him is one of the best quarterback coaches in the National Football League, of which there are not a lot of them. So he is going to make the guy a good player. Like just because you're sitting in your basement in Des Moines thinking that Bo Nix isn't a good, you're not coaching him. Right? You're not even around the player. Bo Nix will be good. Will he have bad days? Absolutely, he'll have bad days. Will he have good days? Yeah, he's going to have a few good ones. But I think the scheme's going to allow itself. That's what Darnold's going to do in the scheme. You know what the amazing thing is? I mean, Jefferson had an unbelievable – you would have thought once he lost Cousins, his production would have gone down. It really wasn't the case.
Some poor guy in Des Moines like, whoa, I'm just having a nice, a nice scone and coffee here at 9:52 a.m. on a Sunday. What are you looking at me for?
That Des Moines basement is just, it causes so many problems for people. It really does. Get more meatloaf, Mom. I mean, it just becomes too difficult for fans to understand that football is very much a game that the coaches really can determine the change of it. I'll give you an example. Last night, you watch Kansas City play against Detroit. Kansas City's working on things on their kickoff coverage game. Okay? Kansas City runs a twist on their kickoff coverage, causes a fumble on the kickoff. See, Kansas City's ahead of themselves, right? They're trying new things. Some coaches in this preseason are just kicking the ball out of bounds. And they're just saying, okay, we're going to take it. Because some coaches in this league could care less about free agency. About special teams. So that coaching matters. If we don't think coaching matters, watch New England play defense this year when the chips are on the when it matters. If you don't think coaching matters, watch some of the things that happens in the league. And that's why I like Kevin O'Connell to coach it. I like Brian Flores to coach the defense. I think they'll be better.
Chess versus checkers in a lot of senses. Like when you watch Kansas City, for example, in the preseason, you bring that up. But to hit this quick before we go to a break, Michael, the week one game, I get that because Kansas City lost week one last year in the same spot at home Thursday night to Detroit, I think a lot of people are going, oh, wow, great revenge spot here for Baltimore. Now that this line is sub-3, Chiefs -2.5 in a lot of places against Baltimore week one, I kind of went into the whole offseason thinking, all right, I'd really like Baltimore in that sense. But when you think about all the offensive line shuffling, likely 3 new starters there to start week one for the Ravens and some question marks there. And how does a new DC and Zach Orr look replacing Mike McDonald here? It feels like people are a little, sleeping a little bit on KC, at least from a power rating market standpoint there for that week one opener.
Yeah, and I think if Rashee Rice doesn't get suspended, which it doesn't look like that's coming anytime soon with Worthy, that makes them more explosive. They have two explosive players now. I think Rice grew up as a receiver. I do think that makes them a different team. And look, this is 2.5. I don't know where Baltimore is with their young offensive line, and we haven't seen much of them defensively with Zach Orr. Let me say this to you. Zach Orr versus Andy Reid opening night is not going to be fun for Zach Orr. He's going to have to rely on that 3 years of experience to help him.
We've seen it happen a bunch, even in the AFC North. I mean, Cincinnati retooled offensive line for Joe Burrow a couple of years ago. I mean, week one, couldn't block worth a lick. And now you're kind of a similar spot, at least for Cincinnati, for Baltimore, I should say, week one going to KC. We'll have more NFL talk as well as college football breakdowns in hour number two of the Lombardi Line. What's on Michael's mind? It might be a quarterback in Pittsburgh. We'll break it down next.